"It's Mama," put in Dunya.
"He doesn't know who Marfa Petrovna is." "Ah, you don't know. And I was thinking that you knew all about us. Forgive me, Dmitri Prokofitch. I don't know what I am thinking about these last few days. I look upon you really as a providence for us, and so I took it for granted that you knew all about us. I look on you as a relation. Don't be angry with me for saying so. Dear me, what's the matter with your right hand? Have you knocked it?"
"Yes, I bruised it," muttered Razumihin, overjoyed.
"I sometimes speak too much from the heart, so that Dunya finds fault with me, but, dear me, what a cupboard he lives in! I wonder whether he is awake. Does this woman, his landlady, consider it a room? Listen, you say he doesn't like to show his feelings, so perhaps I shall annoy him with my weaknesses. Do advise me, Dmitri Prokofitch. How am I to treat him? I feel quite distracted, you know."
"Don't question him too much about anything if you see him frown. Don't ask him too much about his health. He doesn't like that."
"Ah, Dmitri Prokofitch, how hard it is to be a mother. But here are the stairs. What an awful staircase. Mother, you are quite pale. Don't distress yourself, darling," said Dunya, caressing her. Then, with flashing eyes, she added, "He ought to be happy at seeing you, and you are tormenting yourself so.
Wait, I'll peep in and see whether he has waked up."
The lady slowly followed Razumihin, who went on before, and when they reached the landlady's door on the fourth story, they noticed that her door was a tiny crack open, and that two keen black eyes were watching them from the darkness within. When their eyes met, the door was suddenly shut, with such a slam that Pulcheria Alexandrovna almost cried out.
Chapter 3. "He is well, quite well," Zosimov cried cheerfully as they entered. He had come in 10 minutes earlier, and was sitting in the same place as before, on the sofa. Raskolnikov was sitting in the opposite corner, fully dressed, and carefully washed and combed, as he had not been for some time past. The room was immediately crowded, yet Nastasya managed to follow the visitors in and stayed to listen. Raskolnikov really was almost well, as compared with his condition the day before, but he was still pale, listless, and somber. He looked like a wounded man, or one who has undergone some terrible physical suffering. His brows were knitted, his lips compressed, his eyes feverish. He spoke little and reluctantly, as though performing a duty, and there was a restlessness in his movements. All he lacked was a sling on his arm, or a bandage on his finger to complete the impression of a man with a painful abscess, or a broken arm. The pale, somber face lighted up for a moment when his mother and sister entered, but this only gave it a look of more intense suffering in place of its listless dejection. The light soon died away, but the look of suffering remained, and Zosimov, watching and studying his patient with all the zest of a young doctor beginning to practice, noticed in him no joy at the arrival of his mother and sister, but a sort of bitter, hidden determination to bear another hour or two of inevitable torture. He saw later that almost every word of the following conversation seemed to touch on some sore place and irritate it. But at the same time, he marveled at the power of controlling himself and hiding his feelings, this in a patient who the previous day had, like a monomaniac, fallen into a frenzy at the slightest word.
"Yes, I see myself now that I am almost well," said Raskolnikov, giving his mother and sister a kiss of welcome, which made Pulcheria Alexandrovna radiant at once. "And I don't say this as I did yesterday," he said, addressing Razumihin with a friendly pressure of his hand.
"Yes, indeed, I am quite surprised at him today," began Zosimov, much delighted at the lady's entrance, for he had not succeeded in keeping up a conversation with his patient for 10 minutes. "In another 3 or 4 days, if he goes on like this, he will be just as before,
that is, as he was a month ago, or two, or perhaps even three. This has been coming on for a long while, eh? Confess now that it has been, perhaps, your own fault, he added with a tentative smile, as though still afraid of irritating him.
It is very possible, answered Raskolnikov coldly.
I should say, too, continued Zossimov with zest, that your complete recovery depends solely on yourself. Now that one can talk to you, I should like to impress upon you that it is essential to avoid the elementary, so to speak, fundamental causes tending to produce your morbid condition. In that case you will be cured. If not, it will go from bad to worse. These fundamental causes I don't know, but they must be known to you. You are an intelligent man, and must have observed yourself, of course. I think the first stage of your derangement coincides with your leaving the university. You must not be left without occupation. And so, work and a definite aim set before you might, I think, be very beneficial.
Yes, yes, you are perfectly right. I will make haste and return to the university, and then everything will go smoothly.
Zossimov, who had begun his sage advice partly to make an effect before the ladies, was certainly somewhat mystified when, glancing at his patient, he observed unmistakable mockery on his face. This lasted an instant, however. Pulcheria Alexandrovna began at once thanking Zossimov, especially for his visit to their lodging the previous night.
"What? He saw you last night?" Raskolnikov asked, as though startled.
"Then you have not slept either after your journey?"
"Ach, Rodya, that was only till 2 o'clock. Dunya and I never go to bed before 2 at home."
"I don't know how to thank him either," Raskolnikov went on, suddenly frowning and looking down. "Setting aside the question of payment, forgive me for referring to it," he turned to Zossimov. "I really don't know what I have done to deserve such special attention from you. I simply don't understand it, and it weighs upon me, indeed, because I don't understand it. I tell you so candidly."
"Don't be irritated," Zossimov forced himself to laugh. "Assume that you are my first patient. Well, we fellows just beginning to practice love our first patients as if they were our children, and some almost fall in love with them. And, of course, I am not rich in patience."
"I say nothing about him," added Raskolnikov, pointing to Razumihin, "though he has had nothing from me either but insult and trouble."
"What nonsense he's talking! Why, you are in a sentimental mood today, are you?" shouted Razumihin.
If he had observed shrewdly, he would have seen that there was no trace of sentimentality in him, but something indeed quite the opposite. But Avdotya Romanovna noticed it. She was intently and uneasily watching her brother.
"As for you, mother, I don't dare to speak," he went on, as though repeating a lesson learned by heart. "It is only today that I have been able to realize a little how distressed you must have been here yesterday, waiting for me to come back."
When he had said this, he suddenly held out his hand to his sister, smiling without a word. But in this smile there was a flash of real, unfeigned feeling. Dunya caught it at once, and warmly pressed his hand, overjoyed and thankful. It was the first time he had addressed her since their dispute the previous day. The mother's face lighted up with ecstatic happiness at the sight of this conclusive, unspoken reconciliation. "Yes, that is what I love him for," Razumihin, exaggerating it all, muttered to himself with a vigorous turn in his chair. "He has these gestures." "And how well he does it all," the mother was thinking to herself. "What generous impulses he has, and how simply, how delicately he put an end to all the misunderstanding with his sister, simply by holding out his hand at the right minute and looking at her like that. And what fine eyes he has, and how fine his whole face is. He's even better looking than Dunya.
But good heavens, what a suit! How terribly he's dressed! Vasya, the messenger boy in Afanasy Ivanitch's shop, is better dressed. I could rush at him and hug him, weep over him, but I am afraid. Oh, dear, he's so strange. He's talking kindly, but I'm afraid. Why? What am I afraid of? Oh, Rodya, you wouldn't believe, she began suddenly, in haste to answer his words to her, how unhappy Dunya and I were yesterday. Now that it's all over and done with, and we are quite happy again, I can tell you. Fancy, we ran here almost straight from the train to embrace you. And that woman, ah, here she is. Good morning, Nastasya. She told us at once that you were lying in a high fever, and had just run away from the doctor in delirium, and they were looking for you in the streets. You can't imagine how we felt. I couldn't help thinking of the tragic end of Lieutenant Potanchukov, a friend of your father's, you can't remember him, Rodya, who ran out in the same way, in a high fever, and fell into the well in the courtyard, and they couldn't pull him out till next day. Of course, we exaggerated things. We were on the point of rushing to find Pyotr Petrovitch to ask him to help. Because we were alone, utterly alone, she said plaintively, and stopped short, suddenly, recollecting it was still somewhat dangerous to speak of Pyotr Petrovitch, although we are quite happy again.
Yes, yes. Of course it's very annoying, Raskolnikov muttered in reply, but with such a preoccupied and inattentive air that Dunya gazed at him in perplexity.
What else was it I wanted to say? He went on, trying to recollect.
Oh, yes. Mother, and you too, Dunya, please don't think that I didn't mean to come and see you today and was waiting for you to come first.
What are you saying, Rodya? Cried Pulcheria Alexandrovna. She too was surprised. Is he answering us as a duty? Dunya wondered. Is he being reconciled and asking forgiveness as though he were performing a rite? Or repeating a lesson?
I've only just waked up, and wanted to go to you, but was delayed owing to my clothes. I forgot yesterday to ask her, Nastasya, to wash out the blood. I've only just got dressed.
Blood? What blood? Pulcheria Alexandrovna asked in alarm.
Oh, nothing. Don't be uneasy. It was when I was wandering about yesterday, rather delirious. I chanced upon a man who had been run over, a clerk.
Delirious? But you remember everything, Razumihin interrupted.
That's true, Raskolnikov answered with special carefulness. I remember everything, even to the slightest detail, and yet why I did that and went there and said that I can't clearly explain now.
A familiar phenomenon, interposed Zosimov. Actions are sometimes performed in a masterly and most cunning way while the direction of the actions is deranged and dependent on various morbid impressions. It's like a dream.
Perhaps it's a good thing, really, that he should think me almost a madman, thought Raskolnikov.
Why, people in perfect health act in the same way, too, observed Dunya, looking uneasily at Zosimov.
There is some truth in your observation, the latter replied. In that sense we are certainly all not infrequently like madmen, but with the slight difference that the deranged are somewhat madder, for we must draw a line. A normal man, it is true, hardly exists. Among dozens, perhaps hundreds of thousands, hardly one is to be met with.
At the word madman, carelessly dropped by Zosimov in his chatter on his favorite subject, everyone frowned. Raskolnikov sat, seeming not to pay attention, plunged in thought with a strange smile on his pale lips. He was still meditating on something.
"Well, what about the man who was run over? I interrupted you," Razumihin cried hastily.
"What?"
Raskolnikov seemed to wake up.
"Oh, I got spattered with blood helping to carry him to his lodging.
By the way, Mama, I did an unpardonable thing yesterday. I was literally out of my mind. I gave away all the money you sent me. To his wife for the funeral. She's a widow now, in consumption, a poor creature. Three little children, starving, nothing in the house. There's a daughter, too. Perhaps you'd have given it yourself if you'd seen them. But I had no right to do it, I admit, especially as I knew how you needed the money yourself. To help others, one must have the right to do it, or else crevez chien si vous n'êtes pas content. He laughed. That's right, isn't it, Dunya?
No, it's not, answered Dunya firmly.
Bah, you too have ideals, he muttered, looking at her almost with hatred and smiling sarcastically. I ought to have considered that. Well, that's praiseworthy, and it's better for you. And if you reach a line you won't overstep, you will be unhappy. And if you overstep it, maybe you will be still unhappier. But all that's nonsense, he added irritably, vexed at being carried away. I only meant to say that I beg your forgiveness, Mother, he concluded, shortly and abruptly.
That's enough, Rodya. I am sure that everything you do is very good, said his mother, delighted.
Don't be too sure, he answered, twisting his mouth into a smile.
A silence followed. There was a certain constraint in all this conversation, and in the silence, and in the reconciliation, and in the forgiveness. And all were feeling it.
It is as though they were afraid of me, Raskolnikov was thinking to himself, looking askance at his mother and sister.
Pulcheria Alexandrovna was indeed growing more timid the longer she kept silence.
Yet in their absence, I seemed to love them so much, flashed through his mind.
Do you know, Rodya, Marfa Petrovna is dead?
Pulcheria Alexandrovna suddenly blurted out.
What, Marfa Petrovna? Oh, mercy on us, Marfa Petrovna Svidrigaylov. I wrote you so much about her.
Ah, yes, I remember.
So, she's dead. Oh, really?
He roused himself suddenly, as if waking up.
What did she die of?
Only imagine, quite suddenly, Pulcheria Alexandrovna answered hurriedly, encouraged by his curiosity. On the very day I was sending you that letter, would you believe it? That awful man seems to have been the cause of her death. They say he beat her, dreadfully.
Why? Were they on such bad terms? He asked, addressing his sister.
Not at all. Quite the contrary, indeed. With her he was always very patient. Considerate, even. In fact, all those 7 years of their married life he gave way to her. Too much so, indeed, in many cases. All of a sudden he seems to have lost patience.
Then he couldn't have been so awful if he controlled himself for 7 years. You seem to be defending him, Dunya.
No, he's an awful man. I can imagine nothing more awful, Dunya answered, almost with a shudder, knitting her brows and sinking into thought.
That had happened in the morning, Pulcheria Alexandrovna went on hurriedly, and directly afterwards she ordered the horses to be harnessed to drive to the town immediately after dinner. She always used to drive to the town in such cases. She ate a very good dinner, I am told.
After the beating?
That was always her habit. And immediately after dinner, so as not to be late in starting, she went to the bathhouse. You see, she was undergoing some treatment with baths. They have a cold spring there, and she used to bathe in it regularly every day. And no sooner had she got into the water when she suddenly had a stroke.
I should think so, said Zosimov. And did he beat her badly?
What does that matter? Put in Dunya.
But I don't know why you want to tell us such gossip, Mother, said Raskolnikov irritably, as it were in spite of himself. Oh, my dear, I don't know what to talk about, broke from Pulcheria Alexandrovna.
Why?
Are you all afraid of me? He asked with a constrained smile.
That's certainly true, said Dunya, looking directly and sternly at her brother.
Mother was crossing herself with terror as she came up the stairs.
His face worked, as though in convulsion.
Ach, what are you saying, Dunya? Don't be angry, please, Rodya. Why did you say that, Dunya?
Pulcheria Alexandrovna began, overwhelmed.
You see, coming here, I was dreaming all the way, in the train, how we should meet, how we should talk over everything together. And I was so happy I didn't notice the journey. But what am I saying? I am happy now. You should not, Dunya. I am happy now, simply in seeing you, Rodya.
Hush, mother, he muttered in confusion, not looking at her, but pressing her hand. We shall have time to speak freely of everything. As he said this, he was suddenly overwhelmed with confusion and turned pale. Again that awful sensation he had known of late passed with deadly chill over his soul. Again it became suddenly plain and perceptible to him that he had just told a fearful lie, that he would never now be able to speak freely of everything, that he would never again be able to speak of anything to anyone. The anguish of this thought was such that for a moment he almost forgot himself. He got up from his seat, and not looking at anyone, walked towards the door. "What are you doing?" cried Razumihin, clutching him by the arm. He sat down again and began looking about him in silence. They were all looking at him in perplexity.
"But what are you all so dull for?" he shouted suddenly and quite unexpectedly. "Do say something. What's the use of sitting like this? Come, do speak. Let us talk. We meet together and sit in silence. Come, anything."
"Thank God. I was afraid the same thing as yesterday was beginning again," said Pulcheria Alexandrovna, crossing herself.
"What is the matter, Rodya?" asked Avdotya Romanovna, distrustfully.
"Oh, nothing. I remembered something," he answered,
and suddenly laughed.
"Well, if you remembered something, that's all right. I was beginning to think," muttered Zossimov, getting up from the sofa. "It's time for me to be off. I will look in again, perhaps, if I can." He made his bows and went out.
"What an excellent man," observed Pulcheria Alexandrovna.
"Yes, excellent, splendid, well-educated, intelligent," Raskolnikov began suddenly speaking with surprising rapidity, and a liveliness he had not shown till then. "I can't remember where I met him before my illness. I believe I have met him somewhere. And this is a good man, too," he nodded at Razumihin. "Do you like him, Dunya?" he asked her, and suddenly, for some unknown reason, laughed.
"Very much," answered Dunya.
"What a pig you are," Razumihin protested, blushing in terrible confusion, and he got up from his chair. Pulcheria Alexandrovna smiled faintly, but Raskolnikov laughed aloud. "Where are you off to?"
"I must go."
"You need not at all. Stay. Zossimov has gone, so you must. Don't go. What's the time? Is it 12 o'clock?
"What a pretty watch you have got, Dunya. But why are you all silent again? I do all the talking."
"It was a present from Marfa Petrovna," answered Dunya.
"And a very expensive one," added Pulcheria Alexandrovna.
"Aha! What a big one! Hardly like a lady's."
"I like that sort," said Dunya.
"So it is not a present from her fiancé," thought Razumihin, and was unreasonably delighted.
"I thought it was Luzhin's present," observed Raskolnikov.
"No, he has not made Dunya any presents yet."
"Ah! And do you remember, mother? I was in love and wanted to get married," he said, suddenly looking at his mother, who was disconcerted by the sudden change of subject in the way he spoke of it.
"Oh, yes, my dear."
Pulcheria Alexandrovna exchanged glances with Dunya and Razumihin.
Yes.
What shall I tell you?
I don't remember much, indeed. She was such a sickly girl," he went on, growing dreamy and looking down again. "Quite an invalid. She was fond of giving alms to the poor, and was always dreaming of a nunnery. And once she burst into tears when she began talking to me about it. Yes,
Yes, I remember. I remember very well. She was an ugly little thing. I really don't know what drew me to her then. I think it was because she was always ill. If she had been lame or hunchback, I believe I should have liked her better still.
He smiled dreamily.
Yes.
It was a sort of spring delirium.
No, it was not only spring delirium, said Dunya with warm feeling.
He fixed a strained, intent look on his sister, but didn't hear or didn't understand her words. Then, completely lost in thought, he got up, went up to his mother, kissed her, went back to his place and sat down.
You love her even now? Said Pulcheria Alexandrovna, touched.
Her now?
Oh, yes.
You ask about her? No. That's all now, as it were, in another world. And so long ago. And indeed, everything happening here seems somehow far away.
He looked attentively at them.
You now? I seem to be looking at you from 1,000 miles away.
But goodness knows why we're talking of that. And what's the use of asking about it? He added with annoyance and biting his nails.
He fell into dreamy silence again. What a wretched lodging you have, Rodya. It's like a tomb, said Pulcheria Alexandrovna, suddenly breaking the oppressive silence. I am sure it's quite half through your lodging you have become so melancholy.
My lodging, he answered listlessly.
Yes. The lodging had a great deal to do with it.
I thought that, too.
If only you knew, though, what a strange thing you said just now, Mother, he said, laughing strangely.
A little more, and their companionship, this mother and this sister, with him after 3 years' absence, this intimate tone of conversation, in face of the utter impossibility of really speaking about anything, would have been beyond his power of endurance. But there was one urgent matter which must be settled one way or the other that day, so he had decided when he woke. Now, he was glad to remember it as a means of escape.
"Listen, Dunya," he began gravely and dryly. "Of course I beg your pardon for yesterday. But I consider it my duty to tell you again that I do not withdraw from my chief point. It is me or Luzhin. If I am a scoundrel, you must not be. One is enough. If you marry Luzhin, I cease at once to look on you as a sister."
"Rodya, Rodya, it is the same as yesterday again," Pulcheria Alexandrovna cried mournfully. "And why do you call yourself a scoundrel? I can't bear it. You said the same yesterday."
"Brother," Dunya answered firmly and with the same dryness, "in all this there is a mistake on your part. I thought it over at night and found out the mistake. It is all because you seem to think I am sacrificing myself to someone and for someone. That isn't the case at all. I am simply marrying for my own sake because things are hard for me. Though, of course, I shall be glad if I succeed in being useful to my family. But that is not the chief motive for my decision."
"She's lying," he thought to himself, biting his nails vindictively. "Proud creature. She won't admit she wants to do it out of charity. Too haughty. Oh, base characters. They even love as though they hate. Oh, now I hate them all."
"In fact," continued Dunya, "I am marrying Pyotr Petrovich. Because of two evils, I choose the less. I intend to do honestly all he expects of me, so I am not deceiving him. Why did you smile just now?"
She too flushed, and there was a gleam of anger in her eyes.
"All?" he asked with a malignant grin. "Within certain limits. Both the manner and form of Pyotr Petrovich's courtship showed me at once what he wanted. He may, of course, think too well of himself, but I hope he esteems me too. Why are you laughing again?"
"And why are you blushing again? You're lying, sister.
You are intentionally lying, simply from feminine obstinacy, simply to hold your own against me. You cannot respect Lujin. I have seen him and talked with him. So you are selling yourself for money, and so in any case you are acting basely, and I am glad at least that you can blush for it. It is not true. I am not lying, cried Dunya, losing her composure. I would not marry him if I were not convinced that he esteems me and thinks highly of me. I wouldn't marry him if I were not firmly convinced that I can respect him. Fortunately, I can have convincing proof of it this very day. And such a marriage is not a vileness, as you say, and even if you were right, if I really had determined on a vile action, is it not merciless on your part to speak to me like that? Why do you demand of me a heroism that perhaps you have not either? It is despotism, it is tyranny. If I ruin anyone, it is only myself. I am not committing a murder. Why do you look at me like that? Why are you so pale? Roger, darling, what's the matter? Good heavens, you have made him faint, cried Pulcheria Alexandrovna. No, no, nonsense. It's nothing. A little giddiness, not fainting. You have fainting on the brain. Yes, what was I saying? Oh, yes. In what way will you get convincing proof today that you can respect him, and that he esteems you, as you said? I think you said today?
Mother, show Rodya Pyotr Petrovich's letter, said Dunya. With trembling hands, Pulcheria Alexandrovna gave him the letter. He took it with great interest, but before opening it, he suddenly looked, with a sort of wonder, at Dunya.
It is strange, he said, slowly, as though struck by a new idea. What am I making such a fuss for? What is it all about?
Marry whom you like. He said this as though to himself, but said it aloud, and looked for some time at his sister as though puzzled. He opened the letter at last, still with the same look of strange wonder on his face. Then slowly and attentively he began reading, and read it through twice. Pulcheria Alexandrovna showed marked anxiety, and all indeed expected something particular.
What surprises me, he began after a short pause, handing the letter to his mother, but not addressing anyone in particular, is that he is a businessman, a lawyer, and his conversation is pretentious indeed, and yet he writes such an uneducated letter. They all started. They had expected something quite different.
But they all write like that, you know, Razumihin observed abruptly.
Have you read it? Raskolnikov.
Yes. We showed him, Rodya. We consulted him just now,
Pulcheria Alexandrovna began, embarrassed.
That's just the jargon of the courts, Razumihin put in. Legal documents are written like that to this day.
Legal, yes. It's just legal, business language. Not so very uneducated, and not quite educated, business language.
Pyotr Petrovich makes no secret of the fact that he had a cheap education. He is proud indeed of having made his own way, Avdotya Romanovna observed, somewhat offended by her brother's tone.
Well, if he's proud of it, he has reason, I don't deny it. You seem to be offended, sister, at my making only such a frivolous criticism on the letter, and to think that I speak of such trifling matters on purpose to annoy you. It's quite the contrary. An observation apropos of the style occurred to me that is by no means irrelevant as things stand. There is one expression, blame yourselves, put in very significantly and plainly. And there is besides a threat that he will go away at once if I am present. That threat to go away is equivalent to a threat to abandon you both if you are disobedient, and to abandon you now after summoning you to Petersburg. Well, what do you think? Can one resent such an expression from Lujin, as we should if he pointed to Razumihin, had written it, or Zosimov, or one of us?
No, answered Dunya with more animation. I saw clearly that it was too naively expressed, and that perhaps he simply has no skill in writing.
That is a true criticism, brother. I did not expect, indeed.
It is expressed in legal style, and sounds coarser than perhaps he intended. But I must disillusion you a little. There is one expression in the letter, one slander about me, and rather a contemptible one. I gave the money last night to the widow, a woman in consumption, crushed with trouble, and not on the pretext of the funeral, but simply to pay for the funeral, and not to the daughter, a young woman, as he writes, of notorious behavior, whom I saw last night for the first time in my life, but to the widow. In all this, I see a too hasty desire to slander me, and to raise dissension between us. It's expressed again in legal jargon, that is to say, with a too obvious display of the aim, and with a very naive eagerness. He is a man of intelligence, but to act sensibly, intelligence is not enough. It all shows the man, and I don't think he has a great esteem for you. I tell you this simply to warn you, because I sincerely wish for your good.
Dunya did not reply. Her resolution had been taken. She was only awaiting the evening.
Then what is your decision, Rodya?
Asked Pulcheria Alexandrovna, who was more uneasy than ever at the sudden, new, business-like tone of his talk.
What decision? You see, Pyotr Petrovitch writes that you are not to be with us this evening, and that he will go away if you come, so will you come?
That, of course, is not for me to decide, but for you first, if you are not offended by such a request. And secondly, by Dunya, if she too is not offended. I will do what you think best, he added dryly.
Dunya has already decided, and I fully agree with her,
Pulcheria Alexandrovna hastened to declare.
I decided to ask you, Rodya, to urge you not to fail to be with us at this interview, said Dunya. Will you come?
Yes.
I will ask you, too, to be with us at 8 o'clock, she said, addressing Razumihin. Mother, I am inviting him, too. Quite right, Dunya. Well, since you have decided, added Pulcheria Alexandrovna, so be it. I shall feel easier myself. I don't like concealment and deception. Better let us have the whole truth. Pyotr Petrovitch may be angry or not now.
Chapter 4. At that moment, the door was softly opened, and a young girl walked into the room looking timidly about her. Everyone turned towards her with surprise and curiosity. At first sight, Raskolnikov did not recognize her. It was Sofya Semyonovna Marmeladov. He had seen her yesterday for the first time, but at such a moment, in such surroundings and in such a dress, that his memory retained a very different image of her. Now, she was a modestly and poorly dressed young girl, very young indeed, almost like a child, with a modest and refined manner, with a candid but somewhat frightened-looking face. She was wearing a very plain indoor dress, and had on a shabby old-fashioned hat, but she still carried a parasol. Unexpectedly finding the room full of people, she was not so much embarrassed as completely overwhelmed with shyness, like a little child. She was even about to retreat.
"Oh, it's you," said Raskolnikov,
extremely astonished, and he too was confused. He at once recollected that his mother and sister knew through Luzhin's letter of some young woman of notorious behavior. He had only just been protesting against Luzhin's calumny and declaring that he had seen the girl last night for the first time, and suddenly she had walked in. He remembered, too, that he had not protested against the expression of notorious behavior. All this passed vaguely and fleetingly through his brain, but looking at her more intently, he saw that the humiliated creature was so humiliated that he felt suddenly sorry for her. When she made a movement to retreat in terror, it sent a pang to his heart.
"I didn't expect you," he said hurriedly, with a look that made her stop. "Please sit down. You come, no doubt, from Katerina Ivanovna. Allow me, not there. Sit here."
At Sonya's entrance, Razumihin, who had been sitting on one of Raskolnikov's three chairs close to the door, got up to allow her to enter.
Raskolnikov had at first shown her the place on the sofa where Zosimov had been sitting, but feeling that the sofa which served him as a bed was too familiar a place, he hurriedly motioned her to Razumihin's chair. "You sit here," he said to Razumihin, putting him on the sofa.
Sonya sat down, almost shaking with terror, and looked timidly at the two ladies. It was evidently almost inconceivable to herself that she could sit down beside them. At the thought of it, she was so frightened that she hurriedly got up again and in utter confusion addressed Raskolnikov.
I have come for 1 minute. Forgive me for disturbing you, she began falteringly. I come from Katerina Ivanovna, and she had no one to send. Katerina Ivanovna told me to beg you to be at the service in the morning at the Mitrofanievsky, and then to us, to her, to do her the honor. She told me to beg you.
Sonya stammered and ceased speaking.
I will try, certainly, most certainly, answered Raskolnikov. He too stood up, and he too faltered, and could not finish his sentence. Please, sit down, he said suddenly. I want to talk to you. You are perhaps in a hurry, but please, be so kind. Spare me 2 minutes. And he drew up a chair for her.
Sonya sat down again, and again timidly she took a hurried, frightened look at the two ladies and dropped her eyes. Raskolnikov's pale face flushed. A shudder passed over him. His eyes glowed.
Mother, he said firmly and insistently, this is Sofya Semyonovna Marmeladov, the daughter of that unfortunate Mr. Marmeladov who was run over yesterday before my eyes, and of whom I was just telling you.
Pulcheria Alexandrovna glanced at Sonya and slightly screwed up her eyes. In spite of her embarrassment before Rodya's urgent and challenging look, she couldn't deny herself that satisfaction. Dunya gazed gravely and intently into the poor girl's face and scrutinized her with perplexity. Sonya, hearing herself introduced, tried to raise her eyes again but was more embarrassed than ever.
I wanted to ask you, said Raskolnikov hastily, how things were arranged yesterday. You were not worried by the police, for instance?
No, that was all right. It was too evident, the cause of death. They didn't worry us. Only the lodgers are angry.
Why?
At the bodies remaining so long. You see, it is hot now, so that today they will carry it to the cemetery, into the chapel, until tomorrow. At first Katerina Ivanovna was unwilling, but now she sees herself that it's necessary.
Today, then?
She begs you to do us the honor to be in the church tomorrow for the service, and then to be present at the funeral lunch.
She is giving a funeral lunch?
Yes, just a little. She told me to thank you very much for helping us yesterday. But for you, we should have had nothing for the funeral.
All at once her lips and chin began trembling, but with an effort she controlled herself, looking down again. During the conversation, Raskolnikov watched her carefully. She had a thin, very thin, pale little face, rather irregular and angular, with a sharp little nose and chin. She couldn't have been called pretty, but her blue eyes were so clear, and when they lighted up, there was such a kindliness and simplicity in her expression that one could not help being attracted. Her face, and her whole figure indeed, had another peculiar characteristic. In spite of her 18 years, she looked almost a little girl, almost a child. And in some of her gestures, this childishness seemed almost absurd.
But has Katerina Ivanovna been able to manage with such small means? Does she really mean to have a funeral lunch?
Raskolnikov asked, persistently keeping up the conversation.
The coffin will be plain, of course. And everything will be plain, so it won't cost much. Katerina Ivanovna and I have reckoned it all out so that there will be enough left, and Katerina Ivanovna was very anxious it should be so. You know, one can't... It's a comfort to her. She's like that, you know.
I understand, of course. Why do you look at my room like that? My mother has just said it's like a tomb.
You gave us everything yesterday, Sonya said suddenly in reply, in a loud, rapid whisper. And again she looked down in confusion. Her lips and chin were trembling once more. She had been struck at once by Raskolnikov's poor surroundings, and now these words broke out spontaneously. A silence followed. There was a light in Dunya's eyes, and even Pulcheria Alexandrovna looked kindly at Sonya.
"Rodya," she said, getting up, "we shall have dinner together, of course. Come, Dunya. And you, Rodya, had better go for a little walk and then rest and lie down before you come to see us. I am afraid we have exhausted you."
"Yes, yes, I'll come," he answered, getting up fussily. "But I have something to see to."
"But surely you will have dinner together," cried Razumihin, looking in surprise at Raskolnikov. "What do you mean?"
"Yes, yes, I am coming, of course. Of course. And you stay a minute. You don't want him just now, do you, mother? Or perhaps I'm taking him from you?"
"Oh, no, no. And will you, Dmitri Prokofitch, do us the favor of dining with us?"
"Please do," added Dunya.
Razumihin bowed, positively radiant. For one moment they were all strangely embarrassed.
"Goodbye, Rodya. That is, till we meet. I don't like saying goodbye. Goodbye, Nastasya. I've said goodbye again."
Pulcheria Alexandrovna meant to greet Sonya too, but it somehow failed to come off. And she went, in a flutter, out of the room. But Avdotya Romanovna seemed to await her turn, and following her mother out, gave Sonya an attentive, courteous bow. Sonya, in confusion, gave a hurried, frightened curtsy. There was a look of poignant discomfort in her face, as though Avdotya Romanovna's courtesy and attention were oppressive and painful to her.
"Dunya, goodbye," called Raskolnikov in the passage. "Give me your hand."
"Why, I did give it to you, have you forgotten?" said Dunya, turning warmly and awkwardly to him.
"Never mind. Give it to me again."
And he squeezed her fingers warmly. Dunya smiled, flushed, pulled her hand away, and went off quite happy.
"Come, that's capital," he said to Sonya, going back and looking brightly at her. "God give peace to the dead. The living have still to live. That's right, isn't it?"
Sonya looked surprised at the sudden brightness of his face. He looked at her for some moments in silence. The whole history of the dead father floated before his memory in those moments.
"Heavens, Dunya,"
Pulcheria Alexandrovna began, as soon as they were in the street, "I really feel relieved myself at coming away, more at ease. How little did I think yesterday in the train that I could ever be glad of that.
I tell you again, mother, he is still very ill, don't you see it? Perhaps worrying about us upset him. We must be patient, and much, much can be forgiven."
"Well, you were not very patient," Pulcheria Alexandrovna caught her up hotly and jealously. "Do you know, Dunya, I was looking at you two. You are the very portrait of him, and not so much in face as in soul. You are both melancholy, both morose and hot-tempered, both haughty and both generous. Surely he can't be an egoist, Dunya, huh? When I think of what is in store for us this evening, my heart sinks."
"Don't be uneasy, mother. What must be will be. Dunya, only think what a position we are in. What if Pyotr Petrovitch breaks it off?"
Poor Pulcheria Alexandrovna blurted out incautiously.
"He won't be worth much if he does," answered Dunya sharply and contemptuously.
"We did well to come away,"
Pulcheria Alexandrovna hurriedly broke in.
"He was in a hurry about some business or other. If he gets out and has a breath of air, it is fearfully close in his room. But where is one to get a breath of air here? The very streets here feel like shut-up rooms. Good heavens, what a town! Stay, this side. They will crush you, carrying something. Why, it's a piano they've got, I declare. How they push! I'm very much afraid of that young woman, too.
What young woman, mother?
Why, that Sofya Semyonovna, who was there just now.
Why?
I have a presentiment, Dunya.
Well, you may believe it or not, but as soon as she came in that very minute, I felt that she was the chief cause of the trouble.
Nothing of the sort, cried Dunya in vexation. What nonsense, with your presentiments, mother! He only made her acquaintance the evening before, and he didn't know her when she came in.
Well, you will see. She worries me.
But you'll see. You will see.
I was so frightened. She was gazing at me with those eyes. I could scarcely sit still in my chair when he began introducing her. Do you remember? It seems so strange, but Pyotr Petrovich writes like that about her, and he introduces her to us, to you. So he must think a great deal of her.
People will write anything. We were talked about and written about, too, have you forgotten? I am sure that she is a good girl, and that it is all nonsense.
God grant it may be. And Pyotr Petrovich is a contemptible slanderer,
Dunya snapped out suddenly.
Pulcheria Alexandrovna was crushed. The conversation was not resumed.
I will tell you what I want with you, said Raskolnikov, drawing Razumihin to the window.
Then I will tell Katerina Ivanovna that you are coming, Sonya said hurriedly, preparing to depart.
One minute, Sofya Semyonovna. We have no secrets. You are not in our way. I want to have another word or two with you. Listen, he turned suddenly to Razumihin again. You know that, what's his name, Porfiry Petrovich?
I should think so. He's a relation. Why? Added the latter with interest.
Is not he managing that case? You know, about that murder. You were speaking about it yesterday.
Yes.
Well? Razumihin's eyes opened wide.
He was inquiring for people who had pawned things. And I have some pledges there, too. Trifles, a ring my sister gave me as a keepsake when I left home, and my father's silver watch. They're only worth 5 or 6 rubles altogether, but I value them, so what am I to do now? I don't want to lose the things, especially the watch. I was quaking just now for fear Mother would ask to look at it, when we spoke of Dunya's watch. It's the only thing her father's left us. She would be ill if it were lost. You know what women are. So tell me what to do. I know I ought to have given notice at the police station, but would it not be better to go straight to Porfiry, eh? What do you think? The matter might be settled more quickly. You see, Mother may ask for it before dinner.
Certainly not to the police station. Certainly to Porfiry,
Razumihin shouted in extraordinary excitement.
Well, how glad I am. Let us go at once. It's a couple of steps. We shall be sure to find him. Very well, let us go. And he will be very, very glad to make your acquaintance. I've often talked to him of you at different times. I was speaking of you yesterday. Let's go. So you knew the old woman. So that's it. It is all turning out splendidly. Oh, yes, Sofya Ivanovna.
Sofya Semyonovna, corrected Raskolnikov. Sofya Semyonovna, this is my friend Razumihin, and he is a good man.
If you have to go now, Sonya was beginning, not looking at Razumihin at all,
and still more embarrassed.
Let's go, decided Raskolnikov. I'll come to you today, Sofya Semyonovna.
Only tell me where you live.
He was not exactly ill at ease, but seemed hurried and avoided her eyes.
Sonya gave her address and flushed as she did so.
They all went out together.
Don't you lock up? Asked Razumihin, following him on to the stairs.
Never, answered Raskolnikov. I have been meaning to buy a lock for these 2 years. People are happy who have no need of locks, he said, laughing to Sonya.
They stood still in the gateway.
Do you go to the right, Sofya Semyonovna? How did you find me, by the way? He added, as though he wanted to say something quite different.
He wanted to look at her soft, clear eyes. But this was not easy.
Why, You gave your address to Polyanka yesterday.
Polyanka? Oh, yes, Polyanka. That's the little girl. She's your sister.
Did I give her the address? Why, had you forgotten?
No, I remember.
I had heard my father speak of you. Only I didn't know your name, and he didn't know it. And now I came, and as I had learnt your name, I asked today, where does Mr. Raskolnikov live? I didn't know you had only a room, too. Goodbye. I'll tell Katerina Ivanovna.
She was extremely glad to escape at last. She went away, looking down, hurrying to get out of sight as soon as possible, to walk the 20 steps to the corner on the right, and to be at last alone, and then moving rapidly along, looking at no one, noticing nothing, to think, to remember, to meditate on every word, every detail. Never, never had she felt anything like this. Dimly and unconsciously, a whole new world was opening before her. She remembered suddenly that Raskolnikov meant to come to her that day, perhaps that morning, perhaps at once.
"Only not today, please. Not today," she kept muttering with a sinking heart, as though entreating someone like a frightened child. "Mercy. To me, to that room. He will see. Oh, dear."
She wasn't capable at that instant of noticing an unknown gentleman who was watching her and following at her heels. He had accompanied her from the gateway. At the moment when Razumihin, Raskolnikov, and she stood still at parting on the pavement, this gentleman, who was just passing, started on hearing Sonya's words, and I asked where Mr. Raskolnikov lived. He turned a rapid but attentive look upon all three, especially upon Raskolnikov, to whom Sonya was speaking, then looked back and noted the house. All this was done in an instant as he passed, and, trying not to betray his interest, he walked on more slowly as though waiting for something. He was waiting for Sonya. He saw that they were parting and that Sonya was going home.
Home? Where? I've seen that face somewhere,
he thought.
I must find out.
At the corner he crossed over, looked round, and saw Sonya coming the same way, noticing nothing. She turned the corner. He followed her on the other side. After about 50 paces he crossed over again, overtook her, and kept 2 or 3 yards behind her. He was a man about 50, rather tall and thickly set, with broad, high shoulders, which made him look as though he stooped a little. He wore good and fashionable clothes, and looked like a gentleman of position. He carried a handsome cane, which he tapped on the pavement at each step. His gloves were spotless. He had a broad, rather pleasant face with high cheekbones, and a fresh color not often seen in Petersburg. His flaxen hair was still abundant, and only touched here and there with grey, and his thick, square beard was even lighter than his hair. His eyes were blue, and had a cold and thoughtful look. His lips were crimson. He was a remarkably well-preserved man, and looked much younger than his years. When Sonya came out on the canal bank, they were the only 2 persons on the pavement. He observed her dreaminess and preoccupation. On reaching the house where she lodged, Sonya turned in at the gate. He followed her, seeming rather surprised. In the courtyard she turned to the right corner.
"Bah!"
muttered the unknown gentleman, and mounted the stairs behind her. Only then Sonya noticed him. She reached the 3rd story, turned down the passage, and rang at number 9. On the door was inscribed in chalk, "Kapirnaumov, tailor."
"Bah!"
the stranger repeated again, wondering at the strange coincidence, and he rang next door at number 8.
The doors were 2 or 3 yards apart.
"You lodge at Kapirnaumov's," he said, looking at Sonya and laughing. "He altered a waistcoat for me yesterday. I am staying close here at Madame Reslich's. How odd!"
Sonya looked at him attentively.
"We are neighbors," he went on.